The mercy, philanthropy, and the grace of God works in an infinite number of ways. It knows no boundaries in order to help, heal, comfort, strengthen, and save His priceless creation, the human being. And of course, Christ does not limit His providence to the salvation of the eternal soul only. He does not only provide us with all the known spiritual means with which the sinful but eternal soul of man is anchored and purified. Yes, for this soul He was crucified. For this soul He grants His body and blood as permanent and continuous nourishment to deify her. But our Lord does not overlook the human body. The material and physical body, which is full of passions and evils, Christ has come to save the entire human being, the soul and the body. So naturally, He does not overlook the body, but He cares and provides for our physical well-being as well. He provides for the health of the body as the most precious vessel of the soul and the Holy Spirit, as the temple and residence of the Holy Spirit, as St. Paul tells us. Do you not know that you are God's temple and the Spirit of God resides in you? You are the temple of the living God, he says elsewhere. The body of man often succumbs to illnesses, primarily due to sin, and it suffers pain and anguish, and the pain and the afflictions force men to seek refuge to the mercy of God and to call out upon the philanthropical grace of God in order to spare him from this or that illness. And truly, God in His infinite mercy heals men quite often from various illnesses. God's therapeutic intervention may occur directly or at times through the energy of His precious cross, or through the Theotokos and ever-Virgin Mary, or through His saints, and at times through the holy icons. Of course, all these are not new to the Church. God's people always had these benefits in His holy Church. In these two cassette programs, we would like to present to you the history of a holy and precious cross and a fraction of its absolutely amazing and life-changing healings, signs, and wonders, which took place and are taking place not at that time, not centuries and eons ago, but today, in our days, in our perilous and troubled times. These wonders and powerful miracles continue by the uncreated energy of the holy and precious cross of Christ. This introduction was translated and adapted from the Greek tapes of a pious lay theologian of Patras, Greece, Thomas Tsonakas, of blessed memory. I remember listening to these tremendous and life-giving miracles of the precious cross years ago, as many as 10 years ago, and I remember sharing some of this information with a small group over dinner in Savannah, Georgia, when I was invited by Father Nicholas Kapoulos for a Lenten retreat. He was very amazed by the grace of this cross, and he said, "Constantine, why don't you translate some of these stories in English?" I don't exactly remember what excuse I used at the time. I will try, or I will see, or maybe someday. But for some reason, I put it off and eventually forgot about it, or at least put it on the back burner, as the saying goes. About 10 years later, I found myself at the port of Piraeus in Greece towards the end of March, beginning of April 2003, and I was attempting to finish the few last days of my trip on the island of Kos, where I was born, where I still happen to have immediate and extended family members. This was the beginning of the Iraqi war, and I was advised to stay away from southern Greece, being that one of the biggest U.S. Air Force bases are in Ceuta, Crete. This trip, by the way, did not go at all according to my initial itinerary. The trip was extremely fruitful, thank God, but nothing went according to plan up to this point. So I'm heading towards the lovely island of Khorsan. I'm proceeding towards the ferry boat around 5 o'clock in the afternoon. The great thing about visiting Greece in off months from November until mid-April, let's say, you don't have to worry about planes and especially boats being overbooked, and you don't have to wait in lines. But to my great surprise, when I went to pay for my fare, I found about 200 people competing for tickets that were inexistent. I sat back in disbelief, hoping for a small miracle, something, an extra boat, anything to keep me from spending another night in Athens. Don't get me wrong, I do like Athens for at least 48 hours. And on this trip, I spent over 7 days in Athens due to unfavorable weather conditions, etc. So I was the spectator of a heated argument, minor threats, minor cursing, and the usual consequential turmoil of the frail human nature. After an hour of this seaside show, those of us left behind watched the boat drift away in the waters of the Aegean. What exactly happened? Weeks ago, this company, which has an exclusive on the travel to these islands, at least in the off-season, this company decided to sell about 70% of its tickets to the high school graduates who have their class trip every year around this time, and they flood the islands and some of the other historical spots of Greece. So to add insult to injury, the port bus that took us to the boat was now gone, and we had to walk back a mile or two to exit the port of Piraeus. At the end of my walk, I was still in disbelief, and I couldn't help noticing the huge chimney stacks of this ocean liner called Anek preparing to disembark. I looked at the nearby ticket booths, and I noticed several people at their posts, so I remember approaching one of these young ladies, and I made a light demand for a ticket to Kos, knowing that this was not very possible at this time. Θέλω να πάω στην Κο, με ακούτε? I want to go to Kos, do you hear me? And listen to the clever response of this young lady. Kos and Crete start from the same letter. You might as well go to Crete. You have nothing else to do anyway. You mean I should go to Crete? Yes, go to Crete. You have no babies or any pet animals waiting for you to feed. Go to Crete? Well, I said, when is the boat leaving? In about 60 seconds. So I said, please let me have a ticket. So I'm headed to Crete, and in the back of my mind I have the precious cross and his servant, Father Stavros, of course. But I have no recollection where and how to come in contact with him. Crete is a very large island by comparison to Kos and some of the other islands, and I was never there before. Anyway, it felt good not to spend another day in Athens, and I felt even better when I noticed a beautiful Byzantine chapel on the right side of this boat on the second level in the memory of the beloved patron saint of the Greek sea travelers, Saint Nicholas. They had the beautiful Byzantine chanting of the monks of Simonopeta playing all night long, so this was quite a treat. So I thought to go in the chapel for my evening prayers, and I noticed a young man doing his prayer rule in one of the chanter stands, so I went to the opposite side. After he finished, he came up to me and introduced himself, and when I told him that I lived in the U.S., his eyes lit up, and he asked, "Do you happen to know Elder Ephrem?" I said, "But of course, I know him quite well," and I gave him some of the latest news of our 17 monasteries, and he was elated. He gave me names of some family members to give to the elder the next time I see him. And now it was my turn for some questioning. "Do you know Father Stavros with the miraculous cross?" And he said, "Of course, he's in Arethymeno, about an hour away from Ceuta." However, he did not have many more specific details. But thank God this was enough for now. So we traveled through the night, and about 5 a.m. we were exiting the boat. When I stepped off the boat, and I had no idea where I was going, I saw a modestly dressed Greek teenager, a young lady, and I asked her, would you please let me know how to get to Erythimno? Erythimno, that's where I'm going. I'm a college student there. I said, do you know Father Stavros? Of course, he's my spiritual father. I glorify God and his great providence for us. And by the help of Maria Milikas, I was crossing myself while entering the Erythimnian church to meet Father Stavros and to venerate the miraculous and precious cross of Christ. The morning Orthodox service was getting started, so I proceeded to the chanter stand to assist with the chanting. And at the end of the service, Father Stavros, with his assistant priest, did a blessing of the water service, something that pious priests do in their church at the beginning of every month. Finally, Father Stavros began to bless all the faithful with the miraculous precious cross, placing it on their heads, their neck, their back, and everywhere they felt pain or illness. When my turn came, I told him that I don't have any specific physical illness other than the occasional aches and pains and minor possible arthritis starting in my right shoulder. So he blessed my head, my shoulder, my spine, and my neck area. And after he was finished, I introduced myself and he invited me to his office for some customary Greek coffee and a treat. And we conversed for about 2 hours about some of his experiences, his recent travels to Wisconsin at the monastery of St. John the Chrysostom and Gerondissa Melani. I was impressed by his simplicity, humility, and hospitality, and his overall priestly demeanor. He proceeded to tell me about the hundreds of people that came to venerate the Holy Cross from the area of Chicago, to strengthen their faith, to find cure, and to lessen their pain. I will only mention one of the great miracles worked on a non-Orthodox woman. This woman was of American Indian descent, and she was dressed in her traditional attire. She was invited by a Greek friend to come. She had a malignant tumor on her chest the size of an orange, almost like a third breast. With fear and faith, she approached, and she was blessed by the precious cross. And within a matter of days, this malignancy disappeared totally to the amazement of her Roman Catholic doctors, who sort of wrote her off. And after this, they escorted her to meet Father Stavros to see the cross and talk to him. What really impressed Father Stavros about this woman was her lack of selfishness. After her blessing, she did not ask him to pray to get well, to be healed. She said, Father, please pray for the well-being of all American Indians. Pray for the Indian nations. Usually, most of our Orthodox today, Father Stavros noted, ask us to pray for their child, for their brothers, for their wife, husband, close family members. She had a loving heart. She asked not for her own immediate family, but for the well-being of all the Indian people. God loves these prayers, and this is probably why she attracted his merciful healing so quickly. What a great lesson for all of us Orthodox. After this lengthy introduction, I will now return to the original work of Thomas Tsonakis, a co-worker of Dimitrios Panagopoulos and a lay theologian from Patras. Father Stavros informed me that Mr. Tsonakis became ill a few years ago. He was tonsured a monk and he slept in the Lord. We are indebted to brother and monk Thomas Tsonakis, for he took it upon himself to spend a number of days with Father Stavros to document the stories of the lives of the hundreds of people touched and changed by the energy of this precious cross. We pray that his memory be eternal. And we continue now with the work of the repose monk Thomas Tsonakis, who found himself quite unexpectedly in Crete seeking the healing of one of his family members. Priest monk Ieroteos Tsonakis, who was chanting at the beginning of this cassette program. But let's begin to translate his great experience by God's grace. In a rather miraculous manner, I found myself leaving Patras and visiting the island of Crete and the city of Brethymno, where I stayed for 10 days. And there I learned, saw, heard, and venerated a miraculous and most precious cross, which has embedded a piece of the precious cross used for Christ's crucifixion. This cross, a few decades ago, around about 1935 or 1936, began to do miracles and to heal serious and totally incurable diseases, and literally raising people from their deathbed. This cross is now in the hands of our most pious and very faithful priest. So we were informed in Athens that in Brethymno of Crete, there's a precious cross which heals all kinds of infirmities. My son, who is a priest monk at the Holy Mountain, was suffering from a very rare disease, so rare that there are only 2 or 3 individuals in the entire world diagnosed with this disease. His kidney ureters were enlarged to such a point where the fecal matter was reversing back to the kidneys, which were being poisoned by this chronic and congenital condition. Up to that point, there was no known medical cure. A surgery suggested by some doctors offered a 15 to 20% success rate, but in the case of failure, immediate death would follow. Even with these very low odds, we were leaning towards this operation and the only hope of prolonging his life, which was threatened by this condition. And while the doctors were sharpening their surgical blades, so to speak, we took a desperate flight to Crete. And in a short period of time, we were in Brethymno. There, we met a very pious, very special priest, a spiritual personality, you could say, with his equally pious presbytera. They accepted us in their home with such love, incomparably higher than the one brothers and family members showed to each other, and a hospitality equal to Abraham's. We stayed with them more than 10 days. After a number of blessings with the precious cross, Father Stavros was making the sign of the cross on the infected area of my son a number of times and for a continuous number of days, and the miracle was complete and the priest monk was healed. This was a very great and shocking miracle worked by the grace of the precious cross. When the doctors saw the new x-rays, they were speechless, having no scientific clue or explanation about the sudden cure of this chronic and deadly condition. In short, this describes our own personal miracle, our personal healing and experience with this precious cross. However, I would be guilty of sacrilege if I keep silence about this treasure, if I hide it, if I fail to reveal it, and I believe I would be committing a great sin. For this reason, I will attempt to present a short documentary about the amazing powers of this life-giving cross through which God benefits, heals, and restores the health of so many people. But let's summarize the history of this great precious cross, which has 3 special characteristics. The first quality is that when the priest who possesses it, when he places it on the bare skin, on the spot of the illness of the person, it sticks, it attaches to the skin like a magnet, whether in the area of the heart, or the back, or the head, or the kidneys, or the belly, or the feet, or anywhere else, there's a bodily ailment. The second special quality of this cross is to heal the disease with as many crossings as its grace chooses. Some are healed with one single visit or with one crossing, others with 2, 3 or more, and others need multiple trips, and naturally not everyone becomes healed, but those allowed by the grace of God and all those who approach with faith. The third quality is that when the disease is healed, the cross no longer sticks, indicating that health has been fully restored, or in rare situations, if that body part needs a surgical operation, by not sticking, it shows that the operation will be successful. These qualities and its healing powers do not simply emanate from the fact that it contains a portion of the precious cross of Christ, because there are a number of other crosses containing precious wood, in essence, a small portion of the cross of Golgotha, and they may even contain a much bigger piece than this one, and yet they don't display the powers and the healings in comparison to this one of Crete. This holds true for icons as well. We have thousands of icons, but a very small number of them are miraculous. The powers and healings of this cross are not only due to the precious wood embedded in it, but are primarily due to the holiness of all those who held it or possessed it, lived with it, all through the years or centuries even. Every saint who had it in the past increased its deposit of grace, if we can speak like this. So today this cross has become a vessel of grace, a treasure of infinite graces, healing energies, and amazingly shocking miracles. Someone could easily label it as another spring of Siloam, a spring of wellness, treating and curing every disease and every malady. This is one of the great gifts of God, God's love to the people of our century, a time not only inundated by sin and licentiousness, not only offending God with lack of faith, having reached the condition of Sodom, but people today fight God with atheism, antagonize God by openly worshiping the devil and demons and his pomp. People today are viciously attempting to uproot the idea of God's existence from the hearts of the youth and all people in general. Despite all the sinfulness and impiety of people against him, our good Father does not cease to visit and heal, help and strengthen us regardless of our sinfulness. His compassion has no boundaries. However, few people are in tune today to all these great and tender mercies of God. And now we will continue with a brief history of this precious cross of Crete. The information I'm about to offer you was recorded during an interview I had with this priest back in the 20th of March, 1985. I met with his Holy Father and I pleaded with him to agree to a documentary making public the history of this miraculous cross and to make known some of the miracles that he was aware of during and before his time of this blessed possession. This meek and joyous, theological, and most worthy servant of the Most High God accepted my request with pleasure. So I will begin now to share with you all this information in a detailed but brief manner for the glory of God and for the benefit of all of God's people. The name of this priest is Stavros Tsangarakis, and he's the active priest of St. Nicholas and St. George churches of the township of Perivoli and of the city of Rethymno, Crete. He's the supervisor of the nursing home and the president of the clergy association. He's involved with retreats, catechetical schools, lectures, interviews, and counseling of students of colleges, and he's also a father confessor. He's a truly precious and tireless worker of the church, and we're simply showing our appreciation here, and we pray that God rewards him richly and preserves him and protects him from the traps of the enemy. Question: Father, would you be willing to talk to us about the known history and the miracles surrounding this holy cross? Answer: My pleasure. And he began. The beginning of this silver cross, which contains precious wood, an actual piece of the cross of Christ, can be traced back many, many years and possibly centuries. This cross was worn by the glorious Abbot Gabriel of the historical and equally glorious monastery of Arcadiu, who connected his name with the history of our nation, who refused to surrender to the Turks, and he walked into the gunpowder keg room with a lit torch, and he blew himself up in 1866. Unfortunately, we have no recollection of the previous history of this precious cross, how many years and how many centuries and how many blessed hands held it and venerated it. Our knowledge is limited, and no one else from our predecessors seems to know. Before the tragic and historical death of Elder Gabriel, he entrusted this holy cross to one of his most faithful and pious sisters named Athena, who lived in Chania along with her husband, but they had no children. However, his sister Irene, who was married to Nicholas Berberakis, had 5 children, and they lived in Rathymno, about 40 minutes from Chania. So Athena pleaded with her sister Irene to let her adopt one of her 5 children, to raise it, to help for his or her establishment, and to become the heir to all her estate. She was very well to do. Her sister agreed, and she gave her the smallest child, a little girl by the name of Stylianin. This little girl later on became my mother. So this aunt who adopted her, she had the blessing and the grace of the precious cross given to her by her brother Elder Gabriel of the monastery of Arcadio, as we said earlier. But she had it along with her icons on the icon stand at the iconostasi. She was not wearing it. She was not using it. She simply kept it as a precious heirloom up on the iconostasi. At the time, the cross was not encased in the silver case that you see now. This was donated by Stamo, a demon-possessed person who became well. Since then, the cross is always kept inside the silver case. Now, what is inside the cross and how it is put together, no one knows. And as you can see it, it is soldered on all sides and no one opened to see what's inside, not to mention that if someone had the curiosity to open it, this would be a sinful act of impiety. It would be an act of unfaithfulness and sacrilege. If God works through it, then what would be the reason for the search? This Aunt Athena and her husband Nicholas ascribed all the joy, the blessings, the happiness, the health, and the wealth of their entire home to the presence and grace of the Holy Cross. And indeed, they were very happy, healthy and wealthy and reputable people. They believe that all these are due to the grace of the Holy Cross. They made it a point to instill this belief of theirs to their young Stylianin. They would often repeat these questions to their small child, and they would make her answer, "What makes us so blessed? The precious cross," Stylianin would answer. "Who protects us? The precious cross. Who gives us our health? The precious cross," would repeat little Stylianin. So they instilled in little Stylianin that everything good, everything of value in this house is due and ascribed to the presence of the holy and precious cross. Of course, this was very instrumental to develop a deep and strong love in the heart of the child for the precious cross, and at the same time, to ponder and think that if I inherit this precious cross, I will enjoy the same health, joy, happiness, and wealth that I have known with my aunt and uncle. So the years went by, and Stylianin now became a young lady, 15, 16 years old. Her aunt grew very old, and at some point she fell ill, and she became bedridden, and she sensed that her time of death was not too far off. So one day she called a girl, and she told her, Stelio, that was her nickname, "When I took you to live with me, I promised your mother that I would do my best to raise you, to see you grown up, and to help in your establishment, and to be the recipient of my will. But now I see that I don't have much life left to see all this through, and for this reason,
I am now giving you everything I promised to your mother, the homes, and these pieces of land. I'm also giving you 30 gold liras, which I saved for you to use as needed." The young lady was listening very carefully, but she was not saying anything. She was showing that she was not all that satisfied, and this became obvious to the aunt, who asked her, "Are you not pleased with all the things that I'm giving you?" And the young lady responded, "My dear aunt, I really did not wish for all these things, homes and estates and the gold coins. I really had my heart set on the precious cross. That's what I would want." No, of course, she did not want it because of her religious enthusiasm. She was a teenager, and she did not understand much spiritually. But she wanted it because she believed in her innermost being that all happiness, joy, and health and wealth are brought and given by the precious cross, and that's why she wanted it. She wanted it because to her this was the cause of all joy. She believed, if I have this cross, I will have everything. Without it, what need do I have for homes and properties? When her aunt heard all this, she embraced her, kissed her, and told her, "My child, I was planning to give it to you, but I did not bring it up because I wanted to see if you truly wanted it, if you would ask for it. I thought if you would ask for it, then you will truly revere it and honor it, and then the grace of the cross will protect you and keep you in its care, and its grace will stay with you. Otherwise, it would leave you. So since you are asking for it, you may have it and keep it in your place of worship with your vigil lamp lit and offer incense constantly. By the way, you will not tell anyone that the cross is in your hands," because there were other nephews and nieces much older, "because they may attempt to take it from you. After all this, my mother took the precious cross and she hid it in a safe place along with her gold coins. Her aunt also gave her all the other estate promised to her, and after the preparation of all the legal documents, her aunt slept in the Lord in a few days. 2 years later, when my mother was 18 years old, my father, Nicholas Tsangarakis, asked to marry her. He was 50 years old at the time, much older than her, yet my mother accepted his proposal because he was not only a good Christian, but he had the honor of being a pilgrim of the Holy Land, and she assumed that as a pilgrim of the Holy Land, he would revere and he would be respectful towards the grace of her most precious cross. So with this in mind, she disregarded the age difference of 30-some years, and she married him. He was from one of the villages of Vrethymno called Rustika, where he enjoyed a great reputation and high position. So shortly after the wedding, they sold all properties given to my mother by her aunt, and they came and lived here in Rethymno, in Rustika. They bought other homes and properties nearby. They were quite happy. They had a good life together, but they had one major difference. My mother was taught by her aunt to be very generous, to constantly give alms, so she continued to do the same in her own home. It was impossible for her to turn away any soul, anyone who would pass by, known or unknown. She would call them to offer them hospitality and to help them if they needed anything. That's why on her tombstone we wrote, "Blessed are the merciful." My father, rest his soul, did not agree with this thinking of my mother. He felt that she would push him into bankruptcy. "You will padlock us out of our house," he used to say. And they did not see eye to eye in this area. She used to tell him that almsgiving does not make households poor. On the contrary, the grace of God blesses them and enriches them. They were together for 10 years and they had 4 children. I'm the 4th and youngest child. And my mother thought to build this church here, the one that you see. And some evening she tells my father about this desire of hers. "Nico, you know, I thought that it's time for us to rebuild the church. And before you answer me yes or no, I must tell you the reasons why." The other day, I went to the fountain next to the church, and I saw this church caved in, full of ivy and raspberry bushes, in sad shape, and I think it is shameful that there is no one found in our village to cover it and repair it and to secure it, so it can no longer be like a stable for animals. And being that it belonged to your great-grandfather, it would be good for us to rebuild it. In spite of his religious books, his love for church services, his religious character, he basically lived like a monk. He seemed to have a certain tightness with letting money go. He told her expressly, "Listen to me, Hadzina." This is a title she procured by also visiting the Holy Land. They called her Hadzina. "Listen to me. We have four children. Yes, we do have a sizable estate now, but if we use it to rebuild this church, and he may take all of it, the church is a wreck. Then how are we going to take care of our four children and see them established and give them a helping hand? Nico, you go ahead and give me your blessing, your okay, and I will build it without touching any of our estate." Question: did he know about the 30 gold coins? No, he had no idea. So my father replies, "I will give you my okay if you promise me two things. Number one, you will not sell any property that belongs to the children. And number two, I don't want any fundraisers. I don't want people talking, saying that Hadzi's wife is going door to door collecting money. People gossip, and this will bother me." My mother says, "I promise you that I will abide by both of these terms." "Okay, if you exclude these two means of raising funds, you're free to proceed and build the church." After she got his okay, she revealed to him her secret about the 30 gold coins, and he responded, "Since you have them, use them as you please. Go and build whatever you want." Shortly after this, she began to build this church, the one in the middle that you see from here, which celebrates during the Lord's Transfiguration because of the icon of Holy Transfiguration that was found in it. While building the church, my mother also worked in our home as a seamstress. She owned her own sewing machine, and the extra money was put towards the building of the church. So up to this point, everything was going fairly smoothly. Life was pretty normal. But a certain event came to change the daily routine of things by revealing the great grace of the precious cross. This event had to do with a great and awesome miracle carried by the grace of this cross, and it had to do with me. At that time, I was about 5 years old, and some morning while my mother was busy sewing, I stopped playing with my toys downstairs, and getting out of her sight, I managed to get up to the flat rooftop. Walking slowly, I got to the very edge of the roof, where there was a sort of a chimney with an elongated cover stone on it. Thinking that this stone was permanently attached, I put all my weight on it, wanting to support myself so I would not fall. However, the stone was loose, and by me leaning on it, it toppled over, and I found myself riding on it on the way down, a distance of about 15 to 20 feet. The stone hit another similar stone that was found on the ground, so it didn't crush me, per se, but the overall injuries I received from falling on the underlying rocks proved to be fatal. Instantly, blood was running profusely from my mouth, my ears, and my nose. My injuries were numerous. The doctor who was summoned, his last name was Dr. Papavasiliou, simply assured everyone that there was no life left in me, so there was no reason for any medical intervention. My wounds were fatal. The bells of the village church were ringing with the characteristic 5-6 second interval between each ring, announcing that a death had occurred. The news spread like wildfire. People left their daily routine to run and give their support to the unfortunate family. Cries and wailings and much commotion was generated, as it usually happens in similar situations in these small villages. They carried me in the house. They washed me, clothed me, and prepared me for my funeral that evening. my coffin was not ready, was being built, and for the time they had laid me on my parents' bed. My mother was touching my body, which was still warm, refusing to believe that I had died. In her agony and in her pain, she took me in her arms. She was cradling me and squeezing me, weeping uncontrollably. Suddenly, her eyes were glued on the precious cross. She remembered instantly that the cross is all-powerful, and she takes it and places it on my body. In 1 hour, 2 hours, I don't quite recall, I got up in perfect health. A minor scar above my ear serves as the only reminder of the entire ordeal. I was raised from the dead, and yet I was so healthy, so that very evening, instead of being at my funeral, I was playing with the other children in the courtyard of the cemetery church, there where I was supposed to be buried. Up to this point, the precious cross was unknown to everyone. My mother had kept it at the icon stand as the most venerable and honorable heirloom. She kept it next to the lit oil vigil lamp. She offered incense to it, and she venerated it very often, but nothing beyond this. However, after this incident, after this great and awesome miracle that brought me back from the dead, this inconceivable and mind-boggling event, this rebellion against the natural laws, brought great changes around our house. Things would never be the same. The miracle made so much noise, not only around the village, but its news spread all over Crete with lightning speed. Not long after this, people from all villages of Crete were finding their way to our doorsteps, pleading with my mother, Hadzina, "Can you please bless me with a cross? Can you please cross my child?" and so on. This incident took place around 1936, and since then, the grace of the precious cross has been working incessantly. People began to call on her day or night, and she would run to their needs, but crowds were also dropping off to the house on a daily basis to be blessed by the cross, and many of them were healed. However, as it usually happens, Satan was not amused by this healing ministry, and he began his hateful work to block it and destroy it. Initially, he planted some seedlings of jealousy in the hearts of the nearby priests, and they began to complain. Some of the religious people began to question the authenticity of this work and to slander this entire phenomenon as satanic and demonic, as a work of superstitions and witchcraft. Soon enough, these rumors reached the ears of the bishop, the ever memorable Athanasius, who utilized his ecclesiastical authority to put a stop to these activities, and he ordered that my mother stop the blessings and stay at home. This was not an easy matter for my mother, who could not refuse to help people in their suffering and distress. After this holy disobedience, the bishop was forced to padlock the church of the village, the one rebuilt by my mother, and he gave the key to the teacher of the village, who is still alive at the age of 106. He was to keep the key until the official mandate would come from the district attorney's office, being that the church was privately owned. Shortly after this, my mother felt forced to lie to the people coming to be blessed in order to avoid any further complications with the bishop. She used to say that the precious cross was locked up in the church by the authorities and there's nothing she could do. On a given day, a couple came to our door to have their child blessed on the knee, because it was swollen and full of fluid, and my mother refused them, using the same lie that the cross is locked up in the church. The mother of the child left, and while looking into the church, she yelled, "My God, punish those who are blocking the grace of your cross," and she left. These people did not make it to their home yet, and my entire leg became swollen. My mother was aware of the curse of this lady, and she realized immediately that my swelling was the result of this curse. She took the animal, and in a few minutes she rode to the house of these people, confessing to them, "I had to lie to you for this and this reason, but my child is now suffering as well, so I had to come." She blessed the little boy who became well, and at the same time my leg was also healed. The bishop was being informed of all these activities, and he wanted to take the cross from my mother, but the villagers were adamant. They refused to let the grace of the cross leave their village, so the village council suggested to the bishop not to take the cross, but to wait for the ruling of the district attorney's office, and up to that point, to place the cross in the trust of the abbot of the village monastery. The bishop accepted these terms, and the abbot, Yeronda Hierotheos, happened to be related to my father. So the abbot came and accepted the cross from my mother, who was fully at peace, knowing that the cross was in good and secure hands. That very evening, however, after the grace of the cross reached the monastery, the abbot could not get up. His legs were paralyzed. They called a doctor who could not diagnose a single cause for this condition. He found nothing wrong. Many relatives and friends went to visit the abbot during this time, and there some of the brothers of the monastery said, semi-jokingly, "Holy abbot, could it be that Hadzina has a heavy heart and she's cursing for losing this cross? If we were you, we would give the cross back immediately, because if you don't, something worse may happen to you. Now you can move your legs, but in a little while your whole body may become immobile, and one day you will lay down to never get up again." The elder listened to these admonitions, and he immediately called the bishop, telling him, "Please come and take the Holy Cross and do with it whatever you want. I don't want to keep it another minute." So the bishop had no choice but to send his chancellor to remove the cross from the monastery and to give it to the president of the village named Eleftherios Karyanakis, who's still alive, by the way. And when the cross left the monastery, the abbot regained his health instantly. So the president took the cross and reverently placed it on his icon stand. His mother, a very faithful and pious woman, was telling him, "My son, don't keep this cross in your home. Don't get involved in this matter. Give the cross back to the woman who kept it all these years. Don't do this." "Mother, listen to me, please. I'm the president of our village, and it is my responsibility to do all I can to keep the cross in our village. If I don't keep it, then the bishop will take it from us, and we will lose the grace of the cross from our village for good." So the president kept the cross. 3 days later, the president was celebrating his name day, the feast day of St. Eleftherios, and as the president, he enjoyed great popularity in the village, and he opened his doors for the entire village to come and co-celebrate with him. A meal was being served, and just about everyone came to celebrate and wish many years to the president. The chief of police of the area was also there. After the meal, music and wine provided a mix very well known for the people of Crete. While this traditional celebration was in full swing, suddenly everyone sensed a strong fragrance of incense. The president ran towards the kitchen and told his mother, "Must you be using incense at this moment? This is hardly the appropriate time." "My son, no one used incense." "Then why do we smell this fragrance everywhere?" The mother suggested, "Is it possible that this is the work of the precious cross?" They drew close, and to their astonishment, the cross was no longer there. The president was about to lose his mind. He accepted this responsibility as the president, and he was obligated to the bishop and to the village. He reported this to the chief of police, who was present, that the cross was possibly stolen. The party came to a halt, and much confusion took place, and much noise. The police chief ordered to have the doors locked and forbade anyone to leave. After this, he announced to all the guests, "Let me have your attention, please. The precious cross is missing. Now, if someone took it to cross himself, please let him go and put it back in its place." They waited a while, but no one moved. "Since the cross is not put back voluntarily, I have no choice but to do a search." No one seemed to be contrary to the search. However, the search was fruitless, and the cross was not found. In the middle of this unexpected commotion and widespread confusion, the mother of the president took charge and spoke to the villagers. "Please listen to me. I have heard from Hadzina that the cross departs whenever he's not happy with the environment. And is it possible that the time you smelled the fragrance and you were enjoying yourselves with your dancing and drinking, the cross decided to leave?" So the president and the chief of police and the village council ran to my mother's house about 11, 12 o'clock midnight. My father and mother and a couple of neighbors were sitting outside of the house holding a conversation, and they also felt the fragrance, but they did not pay much attention to it. And my father especially heard some noise, something like a knock inside the house, but he thought that one of the cats was moving around and made this noise. They got to the point when they got there. "Mrs. Hadzina, is it true that if the cross is not pleased with a place, the cross leaves?" "What's going on?" she asked. "Did you lose the cross?" "Don't be afraid." And they told her about their dilemma. My father jumped up and he said, "That's what this knock was all about and the incense." So they ran inside the house and found the cross hanging in its original position. The president and the police chief said in one voice, "Since the cross came back in its place all by itself, we will not touch it. But neither will we allow anyone to take it from our village." The next day, he called the bishop, "Your Eminence, even though I'm president of the village, I can no longer keep the cross in my home. But there's no way we will let the cross leave our village either, regardless of what happens." This after he relayed to him all the miraculous works of the cross during the evening of his name day. After this, the bishop sent a letter to my mother telling her to keep the cross in her home until the decision of the DA, and to bind her somewhat, he gave her a rule to clean all the churches of the village and to cross and to continue to bless people, but only in the churches and not in her home or outside of her village. At the time, the governor of the area of Brethimno had a sick child. Hospitals and doctors were not able to stop the pain and the fluid coming out of the child's ear. At some point, his mother found out about the healing grace of the cross, and she came to my mother, who blessed the child, and the boy recovered fully. The missus of the governor, out of gratefulness for the cross, she took off some gold earrings and rings and gave them as an offering to hang by the cross. So the day came where the hearing was finally set to decide the fate of the cross. When the wife of the governor found out, she asked to defend the accused as a witness, and permission was granted. The accusation was that, number one, this woman takes money, and second, it is not permissible for a woman to have such a great power and grace in her possession. Question: did your mother take money? Answer: no, she did not. However, when people would ask Hadzina, "What gift can we offer as a vow?" she would say, "Offer 2 bags of cement, or 20 bricks, or an icon to help the building of the church." But to accept money, this was out of the question, not even a drachma. The bishop maintained that the church does not allow a woman to have such great grace and keep it in her possession. Finally, the greatest hearing of the area of Brethimno just began, and the only one with over 75 witnesses, some for and some against. When my mother saw that 75 witnesses were about to take an oath because of her, she got up and said, "Please, Mr. President, I wish to withdraw from this hearing. I don't want to see so many people sin by swearing in court. So please take the cross and do as you wish. If you feel that it has no place in my hands, that's fine, take it, because I don't want to be responsible for so many oaths." The presiding judge accepted her proposal, and he suggested to only cross-question 2-3 witnesses. So the prosecutor read the written accusations of the bishop, which said that the Holy Cross was a sacred item, holy and reverent, and such a great vessel of grace and power should belong in the church, and it was not appropriate for such a power to be circulating outside of the church, and especially in the hands of a woman. After this, the wife of the governor, who also happened to be an attorney, takes the stand, and she has to be first witness for the accused. Her request was immediately granted, and she began, "Please, Your Honor, I would like you to read over again the paragraph of His Eminence where it states that this holy cross happens to be of the genuine precious wood of Christ, and He has the grace and reverence acknowledged by the bishop." This paragraph was read by the president. Then she started, "Your Honor, it seems obvious to me that you and our bishop acknowledge the power and the grace of the Holy Cross. Yes or no?" "Yes." "We have the testimony of the president of the village of Rustica that the cross left his home all by itself after it was taken there. We have the testimony of the abbot of the monastery that after he took the cross from this lady, he became ill and could not move his feet. And we have every reason to believe that they are telling the truth." "Of course," answered the presiding judge. This sharp female attorney, who was obviously sent there by God, began to weave a great encomium for the female gender, stating, among other things, that who saw first the resurrected Christ? Women. Who gave flesh to God? A woman. Who else is higher than the angels? No one but a woman. She went on, and finally she concluded, "Do you have the impression that this powerful and most miraculous Holy Cross would go to a woman if she was unworthy and sinful? Of course not. The cross could easily leave and go somewhere else. The fact that its grace continues to stay in the hands of this woman, and especially since it left the house of the president, Kalyanakis, and returned to her home, it only proves that the grace of the cross is pleased to be and stay with this woman. And furthermore, Your Honor, you don't see the cross do any miracles in the hands of monks or priests or any other individual, but the cross only chooses to do miracles through the hands of this woman, and it does not wish to stay anywhere else but only in the home of this woman. And now I will also give you my own personal testimony. My child suffered, and not a single hospital, not a doctor was able to offer any help. I took my child to her, and after she crossed him, he became well immediately. So I want to continue to go to her. We all want to go to her, and that's why we respectfully ask for the cross to stay in her possession, especially since that's where the grace of the Holy Cross wishes to be." There was an uproar in the courtroom, confusion, and much unrest. The president finally dismissed the case, and he ruled that this entire case should be handled by the bishop. The bishop in turn sent a certified letter saying that the cross may stay in the possession of this woman. However, she is to limit her activities in her village only. This high-profile court success put a stop to all persecution against my mother, and she was left alone to do her work, and the grace of the precious cross continued to help and heal many sick people. After the death of my father, she devoted her entire life to God and to the needs of the sick and the needy. She was finally tonsured a nun, taking the name of Philothea, because St. Philothea of Athens also healed the sick and those in pain by the grace of the Holy Cross, and that's why my mother favored this name. In summary, this is the beginning and the historical account of this precious cross, which was held by my mother until 1975, the very end of her life. After her death, the Holy Cross was entrusted to me, and despite my unworthiness, the cross still helps all those who come with the faith to find comfort, healing, and to be helped accordingly. The miracles continue to be so many that just in the case of my mother, it is not possible to remember them all.